Welcome to the 325th episode of the Reading and Writing Podcast. Stay tuned for my interview with Susan Allott, author of the debut novel, The Silence. Stay tuned for the interview. Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Susan Allott. Allott's debut novel, The Silence, was recently published. Susan, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
If someone listening hasn't heard about The Silence yet, how would you describe the novel?
I would describe it as a mystery thriller. I've had it described lots of ways, actually. I think it might straddle a few genres, but I generally refer to it as a mystery. And it's set largely in Australia. And it's about a woman who goes back to Sydney after living in London for 10 years because her father has been implicated in the disappearance of a woman who was their neighbour when the protagonist, Isla, was a child. So it's about her trying to clear her father's name and unwittingly unearthing all sorts of secrets in the process, some of which go right back into Australia's colonial history.
And so do you remember the original idea that led you to write the novel?
I do. I mean, I have to say it was a really long time ago. I wrote a short story about a child called Isla. It was written from her point of view. And she was watching her mum pack a suitcase and she didn't know where her mum was going or why. And she also didn't know if her mum was going to take her with her. And I remember my tutor, I had this creative writing tutor at the time, and she said, "That's great. You know, it's well written. Maybe you need to develop a bit of a sense of place." And I kind of, you know, left it for a while, occasionally tried to go back to it, and then eventually decided to set it in Australia. And it became, I developed this character of Louisa as the woman who was leaving Australia. Because the kind of question around that short story was, where was she going and why? So she was leaving Australia because she was homesick and she wanted to go back to the UK. So that was the seed of my story. And that was something that I'd been through myself, having been a homesick expat in Sydney for a couple of years. So it started there.
Well, I know The Silence features multiple timelines, including section set in 1967. Did you have those different timelines planned when you first started writing the novel?
I had no plan whatsoever when I started writing. I don't recommend that to anyone who's thinking about starting. But I really wanted to be a writer since, God knows, as long as I can remember, but was held back by this feeling that I needed to have an idea and a big grand plan of what I was going to write about. And so eventually I just decided to start writing and see what developed from it. So when I started, all I had was these two characters, Isla and her mum. And I knew that it was set in Australia and it was about a woman who was going home from Australia. And that was literally all I knew. And so I thought it was going to be largely set in England when Louisa gets back to England. But over the years, these Australian characters in their Australian setting just took over. And it ended up being a book about Isla going back to Australia rather than her mum leaving.
And so what are your earliest memories of reading in books?
I think I was always a big reader. And my parents were too, and so they introduced me to lots of books, probably books that maybe were I was a bit young for them, but they sort of encouraged me to read beyond my age group, I think. So, for example, I do remember reading all of the Judy Blume books whilst I was at primary school, including that one which is about a love affair forever. Which most people read as teenagers. I read that when I was 9. I know I loved all of those. I loved the Enid Blytons, all of that stuff too. And then I went on and did English literature at university. And I've just always been a bookworm, really.
And you said you always wanted to be a writer before you wrote your first novel, The Silence. Were you writing short stories, or what were you doing?
I think where it started was at school. Creative writing was part of the curriculum up to GCSE level, which is the exams in the UK that you take when you're 16. And so I was doing creative writing constantly as part of my schoolwork. And it was the part of school that I really loved and kind of was, you know, I knew that I was quite good at it. So I just always thought, I'm going to be a writer when I'm older. And then to my surprise, when I went to college to do A-level English, I discovered that you don't do creative writing at A-level. You just read other people's books and write about them. And I was quite disappointed to figure that out. And again, at degree level, you just read other people's books. So I became quite rusty. I stopped writing creatively for quite a few years and started to wonder if I would ever be able to pick that back up, until at some point in my late 20s I just thought, I can't put this off anymore. And that's when I enrolled on the creative writing course where I wrote that short story and didn't look back really after that.
And did you take other courses, and what were those like?
I've done loads of creative writing courses, actually. I love them. Really helped me a lot was an Arvin retreat. This Arvin is an organization, it's a charity which operates in the UK, where you can go and spend a week in a really remote location where there's kind of no Wi-Fi, and you have a creative writing tutor who you meet with every day and works with you to improve your writing. And I did one of those. And really, I just will never forget the advice and guidance I got on that course. It took me from thinking I'm never going to be able to do this to having a draft written a year later. So that was fantastic. I think that one just really got me at the right time. I've also done the Faber Academy course, which is quite a famous one in the UK. It lasts for 6 months. And at the end of it, you get to meet with literary agents. So you stand up, and it's absolutely terrifying. You stand up in front of a group of people and read. I think you only read for 2 minutes or something, but it feels like an hour. And, you know, everyone does that one by one. And then at the end of it, there's wine and nibbles, and you stand there with your writing buddies, hoping that one of these agents might stalk up to you with a business card. Yeah, and one of them did, luckily, so it was worth it. But yeah, absolutely terrifying.
So what was the path to publication like for The Silence, which is your debut novel?
After I finished that Faber Academy course, I worked on my novel for about another year, and then I submitted it to a group of agents, and they all asked for the full manuscript, which is good. It's a reason to celebrate if that happens. So I signed with my agent, Nicola Barr, at the Bent Agency, I think at the end of, I might have this wrong, but I think it was in 2018. And she submitted it. We worked together on it for a few rounds of edits, and then she submitted it in 2019. And we had interest from HarperCollins within 24 hours, which was amazing. Wow. And then another publisher wanted it, and so they had a little bit of a kind of auction between the two of them, and HarperCollins won that.
Wow, that's a great story.
It was all very exciting.
So the Silence, you said, is your first novel, and as you mentioned earlier, you started it really with no plan. Were there things that you learned along the way about writing a novel?
Oh, totally. I learned to write whilst I was writing it and made all my mistakes on it. For example, I remember spending, God knows, months and months and months, you know, polishing the first chapter before I moved on to the second chapter. And of course, that chapter has long since been deleted. I now know that the best thing to do is to write a fairly scrappy first draft and not worry too much about whether the sentences are beautiful. So I took much too long over the first draft, and probably all the subsequent drafts. And I also very late discovered books which help you to understand how to structure a novel so that it's paced well and has suspense and jeopardy and keeps people wanting to turn the pages. For a really long time, I had a well-written story that didn't quite feel like a novel. And so I eventually learned all of those tricks around how to structure a book, which actually come from screenwriting. There's a book I'm looking at on my shelf called Story by Robert McKee, which was very helpful. And of course, there are lots more. But it's all about how to build in that feeling of getting your hook in at the right place, getting your midpoint at the right place, and then you've got to build in a point at which your protagonist has their darkest hour, and then you drag them back out of it. I wish I'd found all of that stuff much sooner. It's so helpful.
So, have you started working on another novel?
I have. I'm at the fairly early stages of my second book now, and it's really very different this time around. Not that I feel like I know what I'm doing at all. It's still not easy, but I have learned so much from the first time around.
And so what writing advice would you offer for listeners who are writing their own stories and novels?
I'll go back to that course that I did several years ago now, the Arvon retreat, where the tutor said to me and to all of us as a group, you don't treat your work in progress like you're cooking something on the stove and you're trying to make it rich and delicious. You know, you've got to keep it simmering and don't ever let it go cold. And so that metaphor is quite helpful for me as someone who likes to cook. But basically what it means is you have to write a little bit every day. And what the mistake I'd been making prior to that was thinking that I had to clear a whole day of my life and sit down with my laptop and write, you know, and then I could only manage to do that once a month. And so by the time I opened the laptop again, I had no idea where I was going with it. And it seemed ridiculous and I ended up deleting it usually. So even if some days you can only look at it for 10 minutes whilst you're doing something else, you should try and do that every day. And then if you can clear a day, that's great. But the most important thing is to try and do a sort of little and often approach. So that was so helpful to me. And also that thing about just don't over polish your first draft. It's more important to keep moving forward with it and build momentum. Rather than there's such a temptation to just work on the same paragraph for a week because you don't know what's going to happen next, I think, is the reason we do that. So, yeah, just keep moving forward a little bit every day.
So with the second novel, I'm curious, are you doing more planning or are you still writing more organically?
I do have a plan this time around, but I also know that I will probably almost certainly deviate from it. But I use a program called Scrivener now where I have it all mapped out. It looks like a kind of chalkboard or a corkboard even. I can see my characters are color-coded. I can see where the midpoint comes in. So I'm much more structured about it now, which makes the whole thing feel more manageable. Yeah.
So what novels or nonfiction books have you read recently that you enjoyed?
I just finished reading a book of short stories, which are kind of working for me at the moment. This whole lockdown thing is quite, sometimes it can hit your concentration a bit. Curtis Sittenfeld, they were called You Think It, I'll Say It. And I thought her writing was very fresh and sharp and funny and clever. And she's got a new book out now called Rodham, so I'm going to be looking out for that. And another one that I read that was great was a book written and set in the 70s in Australia called Monkey Grip by Helen Garner. I'm a big fan of Australian fiction, so I really enjoyed that. So interesting to read a book that's written and set at the same time, if that makes sense. Quite often you read books that are set in the past, but she was writing about her own experience of being a young woman in Australia in the 70s, and she's kind of got this feminist ideology, but she's also in love with this guy, and those two things are clashing in her life. So that was a beautifully well-written book. Just Australian fiction, really. Tim Winton, Evie Wilde, who's British, but she writes about Australia. She's a beautiful writer. I could go on. Do you want me to go on, or is that enough?
When you were working on The Silence, were there novelists or specific novels that you kind of looked to, not necessarily to mimic, but just in terms of their general feel and style?
Yeah, I mean, a book that had quite a big influence on me is a book called The Slap by Christos Tolkas. He's an Australian writer. The book's set in Melbourne. It's about a man who slaps a child at a family barbecue and the kind of fallout from that, and each chapter with a different point of view. I think it's an extraordinary exercise in empathy. He is brilliant at getting right under a character's skin so that you are in their head and you utterly see the world from their perspective. And it helps you to realize that you can't, it's very difficult to feel badly towards somebody if you've been inside their head for a while. You might not sympathize with that character particularly, but you do empathize with them. And so I'm not saying that I pulled it off as spectacularly as he did, but I did try to use some of those techniques in The Silence. I stopped myself from rereading it. I wondered if I should, but then I thought, no, I don't want to be too influenced by it. I've got to find my own way, but it stayed with me.
Great. Well, where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and The Silence?
Well, I've got a website, which is www.susanallott.com. It's Allott, my surname. So that's probably quite a good place to start, and all my social media links are on there. But I am on Twitter at Susan Allott, and I'm on Instagram and Facebook too.
Great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Susan Allott. Susan's debut novel, The Silence, is available now, so go buy a copy. And Susan, thanks for doing this interview.
Thank you. It's been great.
Now stay tuned for a short excerpt from the audiobook of The Silence by Susan Allott, narrated by Mel Stewart, available wherever audiobooks are sold.
In a basement flat in Hackney, the telephone rings. It's 2 a.m. Isla Green stands in the hallway, pyjamaed, barely awake. She is entirely sober. A good thing, if a little fragile. A little surprising. No tide of shame waits for her. No bloom of pain. She feels clean in her skin, like a schoolgirl. She can taste toothpaste in her throat. On the third ring, she reaches for the receiver. It's Dom's voice she will hear if the answer phone picks up, and his voice will set her back. It's 3 months since he left. And every day she means to wipe the message. She lifts it to her ear just in time. Hello? It takes her a second to place him. Dad?
I didn't wake you, did I?
She doesn't know why she's gripping the receiver, why a trill of fear has sounded in her head. It's good to hear her dad's voice, which is more Australian than her own these days. He's got the time difference wrong, that's all. At the end of the street, a police siren starts its upward loop
and cuts out. Its blue light flashes silently.
What time is it there?
I don't know. She stretches her free arm above her head, arching her back. In the 8 weeks and 3 days since her last drink, she has been sleeping like the dead.
Shall I call back later?
It's fine. Is everything okay?
I wanted to talk to you, he says. Your mother doesn't know I'm calling. She went into town.
She sits down on the carpet. This is the thing she couldn't put her finger on, that she should have known was wrong from the start. Her dad hasn't called her in the decade she's lived in London. It's her mum who makes the phone calls, leaves messages on the answer phone. Her dad writes letters. He hates the phone. What is it?
I didn't want you to hear it from your mother. She hasn't taken it well. I wanted to tell you myself.
She drops her head between her knees. She thinks, if he's going to die, I'll need a drink. Cold, practical thoughts. She will finish this call and she will put her clothes on. There's an all-night takeaway at Clapton Pond where they sell 6 packs of beer under the counter.
The police came to see me, he says.
The police?
They're looking for a woman I used to know.
Isla lifts her head. She's sweating. She runs her hand through her damp hair. What woman?
She was a neighbour of ours, back when we first moved to Sydney. You wouldn't remember.
He coughs.
It looks like she's been missing a long time. Nobody's seen her in 30 years.
The police car crawls past outside, swinging its blue light across the walls. What's this got to do with you?
The police think her disappearance is suspicious,
he says.
They think I was the last person to see her before she went missing.
And were you? She tries to sound calm. Were you the last person to see her?
I can't have been. She moved away with her husband. I told them there must be some mistake.
He lights a cigarette, exhales. She thinks of Dom, smiling behind a flame. Is she dead?
They think she must be.